A Cajun Night Before Christmas by Troclair. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, they don't a ting pass, not even a mouse. The cheerin' be nestled, good snug on the floor, and mama be past the pepper to the crack in the dough. Then mama the fireplace done roast up the ham, stir up the gumbo, and make bake the yam. Then out on the bayou, they got such a clatter, make sound like old Boudreaux done fall off his ladder. I run like a rabbit to got to the dough, and trip over the dough and fall on the floe. As I look out the dough in the light of the moon, I think, man, you crazy. I got old too soon. 'Cause there on the bayou, when I stretch my neck stiff, there's 8 alligator pulling the skiff. And a little fat drover with the long pulling stick. I know right away, got to be old Saint Nick. Mo faster and faster the gator day came, he whistle and holler and called him by name. Ha Gaston, ha Tip Boy, ha Pierre, now say. Jean Ninette, Jean Suzette, Celeste, and Renee. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. May crawl, alligator, and be sure you don't fall. Like Tom Flo's cat, through the treetop he fly, when the big old hound dog come run himself by. Like that up the porch, them old gator climb, with the skiff full of toy and St. Nicholas behind. Then on top of the porch roof, it sound like the hail, when all them big gator done sought down their tail. Then down the chimney, I yell with a bam, and St. Nicholas fall. And sit on the yam. Sacre, he explained, my pant got a hole. I done set myself on them red hot coal. He got on his foots and jumped like a cat out to the floor where he land with a splat. He was dressed in muskrat from his head to his foot, and his clothes is all dirty with ashes and soot. A sack full of plaything he throw on his back, he look like a burglar, and that's for a fact. His eyes how they shine, his dimple how merry. Maybe he been drink the wine from Blackberry. His cheek was like rose, his nose like a cherry. On second top, maybe he lap up the sherry. With snow white chin whisker and quivering belly, he shook when he laughed like the strawberry jelly. But a wink in his eye and a shook of his hand make my confidence that I don't got to be scared. He don't do no talking, gone straight to the work. Put plaything in sock and then turn with a jerk. He put his hand there on top of his head, cast an eye on the chimney, and then he done said, with all that there fire and them burning hot flame, me, I ain't going back by the way that I came. So we run out the dough and he climbed to the roof. He ain't no fool him for to make one more goof. He jump in his skiff and crack his big whip. The gator move down and don't make one slip. And I hear him shout loud as a splashing he go, Merry Christmas to all till I see you some more.
A Chaparral Christmas Gift by O. Henry. The original cause of the trouble was about 20 years in growing. At the end of that time, it was worth it. Had you lived anywhere within 50 miles of Sundown Ranch, you would have heard of it. It possessed a quantity of jet black hair, a pair of extremely frank, deep brown eyes, and a laugh that rippled across the prairie like the sound of a hidden brook. The name of it was Rosita McMullen, and she was the daughter of Old Man McMullen of the Sundown Sheep Ranch. There came riding on red roan steeds, or to be more explicit, on a paint and a flea-bitten sorrel, two wooers. One was Madison Lane, and the other was the Frio Kid. But at that time, they did not call him the Frio Kid, for he had not earned the honors of special nomenclature. His name was simply Johnny McRoy. It must not be supposed that these two were the sum of the agreeable Rosita's admirers. The broncos of a dozen others champed their bits at the long hitching rack of the Sundown Ranch. Many were the sheeps, eaves that were cast in those savannas that did not belong to the flocks of Dan McMullen. But of all the cavaliers, Madison Lane and Johnny McRoy galloped far ahead, wherefore they are to be chronicled. Madison Lane, a young cattleman from the Nueces country, won the race. He and Rosita were married one Christmas day. Armed, hilarious, vociferous, magnanimous, the cowmen and the sheepmen, laying aside their hereditary hatred, joined forces to celebrate the occasion. Sundown Ranch was sonorous with the cracking of jokes and six-shooters, the shine of buckles and bright eyes, the outspoken congratulations of the herders of kine. But while the wedding feast was at its liveliest, there descended upon it Johnny McRoy, bitten by jealousy like one possessed. "I'll give you a Christmas present," he yelled shrilly at the door with his .45 in hand. Even then he had some reputation as an offhand shot. His first bullet cut a neat underbit in Madison Lane's right ear. The barrel of his gun moved an inch. The next shot would have been the bride's had not Carson, a sheepman, possessed a mind with triggers somewhat well-oiled and in repair. The guns of the wedding party had been hung in their belts upon nails in the wall as they sat at the table, a concession to good taste. But Carson, with great promptness, hurled his plate of roast venison and frijoles at McRoy, spoiling his aim. The second bullet, then, only shattered the white petals of a Spanish dagger flower suspended 2 feet above Rosita's head. The guests spurned their chairs and jumped for their weapons. It was considered an improper act to shoot the bride and groom at a wedding. In about 6 seconds, there were 20 or so bullets due to be whizzing in the direction of Mr. McRoy. "I'll shoot better next time," yelled Johnny, "and there'll be a next time." He backed rapidly out the door. Carson, the sheepman, spurred on to attempt further exploits by the success of his plate throwing, was first to reach the door. McRoy's bullet from the darkness laid him low. The cattleman then swept out upon him, calling for vengeance, for while the slaughter of a sheepman has not always lacked condonement, it was a decided misdemeanor in this instance. Carson was innocent. He was no accomplice at the matrimonial proceedings, nor had anyone heard him quote the line, "Christmas comes but once a year," to the guests. But the sortie failed in its vengeance. McRoy was on his horse and away, shouting back curses and threats as he galloped into the concealing chaparral. That night was the birth night of the Frio Kid. He became the bad man of that portion of the state. The rejection of his suit by Miss McMullen turned him into a dangerous man. When officers went after him for the shooting of Carson, he killed two of them and entered upon the life of an outlaw. He became a marvelous shot with either hand. He would turn up in towns and settlements, raise a quarrel at the slightest opportunity, pick off his man and laugh at the officers of the law. He was so cool, so deadly, so rapid, so inhumanely bloodthirsty, that none but faint attempts were ever made to capture him. When he was at last shot and killed by a little one-armed Mexican who was nearly dead himself from fright, the Frio Kid had the deaths of 18 men on his head. About half of these were killed in fair duels depending upon the quickness of the draw. The other half were men assassinated from absolute wantonness and cruelty. Many tales are told along the border of his impudent courage and daring, but he was not one of the breed of desperados who have seasons of generosity or even softness. They say he never had mercy on the object of his anger. Yet, at this and every Christmastide, it is well to give each one credit if it can be done, for whatever speck of good he may have possessed. If the Frio Kid ever did act kindly or felt a throb of generosity in his heart, it was once at such a time and season, and this is the way it happened. One who has been crossed in love should never breathe the odor from the blosses of the Ratama tree. It stirs the memory to a dangerous degree. One December in the Frio country, there was a Ratama tree in full bloom, for the winter had been as warm as springtime. That way rode the Frio Kid and his satellite of a co-murderer, Mexican Frank. The kid reined in his Mustang and sat in his saddle, thoughtful and grim, with dangerously narrowing eyes. The rich, sweet scent touched him somewhere beneath his ice and iron. "I don't know what I've been thinking about, Mex," he remarked in his usual mild drawl. "Who forgot all about a Christmas present I gotta give? I'm gonna ride over tomorrow night and shoot Madison Lane in his own house. He got my girl, Rosita. Rosita would have had me if he hadn't cut into the game. I wonder why I happened to overlook it up until now."
"Ah, shucks, kid," said Mexican. "Don't talk foolishness. You can't get within a mile of Mad Lane's house tomorrow night. I see old man Allen day before yesterday, and he says Mad's going to have a Christmas doings at his house. You remember how you shot up the festivities when Mad was married, about the threats you made? Don't you suppose Mad Lane will keep his eye open for a certain Mr. Kid? You plumb make me tired, kid, such remarks."
"I'm going," repeated the Frio Kid without heat, "to go to Madison Lane's Christmas doings and kill him. I'd have done it a long time ago. Why, Max, just 2 weeks ago, I dreamed me and Rosita was married instead of her and him. We was living in a house, and I could see her smiling at me, and Maxie got her, and I'll get him. Yes, sir, on Christmas Eve, he got her, and that's when I'm gonna get him."
"There's other ways of committing suicide," advised Mexican Frank. "Why don't you go surrender to the sheriff?"
"I'll get him," said the kid.
Christmas Eve fell as balmy as April. Perhaps there was a hint of a faraway frostiness in the air, but it tingles like seltzer, perfumed faintly with late prairie blossoms and the mesquite grass. When night came, the five or six rooms of the ranch house were brightly lit. In one room was a Christmas tree, for the Lanes had a boy of three, and a dozen or more guests were expected from the nearer ranches. At nightfall, Madison Lane called aside Jim Belcher and three other cowboys employed on his ranch. "Now, boys," said Lane, "keep your eyes open. Walk around the house and watch the road well. All of you know the Frio Kid, as they call him now. And if you see him, open fire on him without asking any questions. I'm not afraid of his coming around, but Rosita is. She's been afraid he'd come in on us every Christmas since we were married." The guests had arrived in buckboards and on horseback and were making themselves comfortable inside. The evening went along pleasantly. The guests enjoyed and praised Rosita's excellent supper, and afterward the men scattered in groups about the rooms or on the broad gallery, smoking and chatting. The Christmas tree, of course, delighted the youngsters, and above all they were pleased when Santa Claus himself, in magnificent white beard and furs, appeared and began to distribute the toys. "It's my papa," announced Billy Sampson, aged 6. "I've seen him wear 'em before." Berkeley, a sheepman and old friend of Lane, stopped Rosita as she was passing by him on the gallery where he was sitting and smoking. "Well, Mrs. Lane," he said, "I suppose by this Christmas you've gotten over being afraid of that fellow McRoy, haven't you? Madison and I have talked about it, you know." "Very nearly," said Rosita, smiling, "but I am still nervous sometimes. I shall never forget the awful time when he came so near to killing us." "He's the most cold-hearted villain in the world," said Berkeley. "The citizens all along the border ought to turn out and hunt him down like a wolf." "He has committed awful crimes," said Rosita, "but I don't know. I think there's a spot of good somewhere in everybody. He was not always bad, that I know." Rosita turned into the hallway between the rooms. Santa Claus, in muffling whiskers and furs, was just coming through.
"I heard what you said through the window, Mrs. Lane," he said. "I was just going down in my pocket for a Christmas present for your husband, but I've left one for you instead. It's in the room to your right."
"Oh, thank you, kind Santa Claus," said Rosita brightly.
Rosita went into the room while Santa Claus stepped into the cooler air of the yard.
she found no one in the room but Madison. "Where is my present that Santa said he left for me in here?" she asked. "Haven't seen anything in the way of a present," said her husband, laughing, "unless he could have meant me." The next day, Gabriel Rad, the foreman of the XO Ranch, dropped into the post office at Loma Alta. "Well, Frio Kid's got his dose of lead at last," he remarked to the postmaster. "That so? How'd it happen?" "One of old Sanchez's sheep herders did it. Think of that, the Frio Kid killed by a sheep herder. He saw him riding along past his camp about 12 o'clock last night and was so scared that he up with a Winchester and let him have it. Funniest part, the kid was dressed all up with angora skin whiskers and like a regular old Santa Claus rig out from head to foot. Think of that, the Frio Kid playing Santa Claus."
Christmas Trees by Robert Frost. The city had withdrawn into itself and left at last the country to the country, when between whirls of snow not come to lie and whirls of foliage not yet laid, there drove a stranger to our yard, who looked the city, yet did in country fashion, in that there he sat and waited till he drew us out, a-buttoning coats, to ask him who he was. He proved to be the city come again to look for something it had left behind, and could not do without and keep its Christmas. He asked if I would sell my Christmas trees.
My woods, the young fir balsams like a place where houses all are churches and have spires. I hadn't thought of them as Christmas trees. I doubt if I was tempted for a moment to sell them off their feet to go in cars and leave the slope behind the house all bare, where the sun shines now no warmer than the moon. I'd hate to have them know it if I was. Yet more I'd hate to hold my trees except as others hold theirs, or refuse for them, beyond the time of profitable growth, the trial by market everything must come to. I dallied so much with the thought of selling. Then, whether from mistaken courtesy and fear of seeming short of speech, or whether from hope of hearing good of what was mine, I said, "There aren't enough to be worthwhile." I could soon tell how many they would cut. You let me look them over. You could look, but don't expect I'm going to let you have them. Pasture they spring in, some in clumps too close that lop each other of boughs, but not a few quite solitary and having equal boughs all round and round. The latter he nodded yes to, or paused to say beneath some lavalier one, with a buyer's moderation, "That would do." I thought so too, but wasn't there to say so. We climbed the pasture on the south, crossed over, and came down on the north. He said, "1,000.
1,000 Christmas trees? At what a piece?"
He felt some need of softening that to me. 1,000 trees would come to $30. Then I was certain I had never meant to let him have them. Never show surprise. But $30 seemed so small beside the extent of pasture I should strip. 3 cents, so small beside the dollar friends I should be writing to within the hour would pay in cities for good trees like those. Regular vestry trees whole Sunday schools could hang enough on to pick off enough. 1,000 Christmas trees I didn't know I had, worth 3 cents more to give away than sell, as may be shown by a simple calculation. Too bad I couldn't lay one in a letter. I can't help wishing I could send you one, and wishing you herewith a Merry Christmas.
Gherkin Radio Theater would like to thank the following contributing orators: Ranger Fox, Mary May, Alyssa Murphy, Shaylin Cochran, and Elizabeth Huntley, with guitar arrangements throughout by the talented Derek Poppin. Merry Christmas from the Gherkin Radio Theater.